Net.
In response to multitudinous complaints from people around the world, I tend to be a bit parochial, thinking that this environment here in small northeastern Ohio is the only place this program goes out. Well, it doesn't. I have a listening audience of close to 65 people now. And because of Sirius Satellite Radio or the Internet, we can get many countries. Anybody in these other countries want to listen. The complaints have been, Dr. Ray, you speak English. As though that's it. There are billions and billions of people, in the words of former Carl Sagan, who, by the way, now knows whether there's a God or not. There are people who don't understand a word you're saying. I know this. I've got children. I know this. However, actually, what they said was, you need to be a little more sensitive to people in other places who don't speak your language. I said, okay. I've taken some courses. Local college. I've got a second language. Australian. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know how in Spanish you can say hello in Spanish, hola. You can say hello in Italian. Well, I can say hello in Australian. Hello. So I'm working on it. And that's also a little bit Britain there, too. Well, good morning, West. Good afternoon, East. Hello. Doctor is in. 877-573-7825. 877-5. Pep talk. Number to get onto the program. That's it. That's all I'm going to tell you because I want to go straight into the monologue. You don't trust me. How often have your big kids thrown that one at you? And parents feel guilty when they hear that. You don't trust me. To which, immediately, we're put on the defensive. We look at parenting manual, subsection A, page 42, paragraph C5, and we give the standard parenting comeback. No, I trust you. I just don't trust the other people who are out at that time. Or, I trust you, but I just don't trust the situation. And we backpedal. Because, heaven forbid, we would want to imply that we don't trust our children. That's a put-down. That's a lack of acknowledgement of their character. We need to affirm them. The self-image movement, the self-esteem movement, this is one of its children. That if you don't trust your children, that somehow you're not stroking their self-image. You're not making them feel good about themselves. You can't, oh, heaven forbid, you can't do that. Had a mom come up to me after a talk, and she said, what do I say to my son when he wants to do something at age 15? And I say, no, and he says, you don't trust me. How do I make him realize I do trust him? And I said, well, I got an easy answer for you, that one. When he says, you don't trust me, you look at him and say, son, you're right, I don't. Because you really don't. Let's quit tap dancing around it. It is not a put down to say I don't trust you. It's an acknowledgement of reality. Remember the words to the act of contrition that we were taught? I firmly resolve with the help of your grace to sin no more and to avoid the near occasions of sin because I don't trust me. It's not a characterological moral put-down of someone if you say you don't trust them in certain situations. I don't trust me in certain situations. Why would I go to a bar filled with a whole bunch of girls and say, well, I'm just going to just have myself maybe 10 or 12 drinks, not know anything of what I'm doing, and just, I'll be okay. That's crazy. You don't put yourself in situations where you could fail morally, commit wrongdoing, dare I say sin, rather than just a moral mistake. As a result, it is prudence not to trust a child who, can we assume, in most cases,
does not have the moral stability and the maturity and the judgment and the responsibility to make good decisions when they are in bad situations? Don't be bullied by that one. You don't trust me? You're right, son, I don't. And that's okay. I love you. But I understand human nature. I understand temptation. I understand the near occasion of sin. Yes, you're right. It isn't good to go out at age 15 with your buddies to Taco Bell till 12 o'clock or 12:30 being met by 9 other girls. Right. Not a good thing. Would you make the right decision? Yeah, you very well could. But I don't know what circumstances and opportunities will arrive. And at what point will you make a bad decision? What girl might come? I suspect that if all 9 girls are thinking of going to the convent, then you might have a nice, stimulating religious discussion. On the other hand, if 6 of the girls have tattoos over every visible body part and really haven't been raised with a whole lot in the way of religious viewpoint, then I would just wonder if the opportunity to do morally foolish things would present it.
Ask a happily married Catholic man or woman, and they'll likely tell you how vital it is to have a strong mutual faith life. It's the single largest component of a happy marriage. CatholicMatch.com is a tool to help you find who and what God wants for you. CatholicMatch.com is not simply a website, it's a real online community of Catholics who offer support and friendships. From that community
of that, I'm simply saying I recognize reality. For me too. So, the next time your kid tries to bully you with, "You don't trust me," don't try to defend yourself. Don't try to backtrack and imply that, "Oh, no, I think you're a wonderful human being. I just think you're, oh, yes, you, I could, oh, no, you would never make a bad decision. No, you're too morally strong for that." No. Unabashedly, lovingly, say, "You know what, honey? In a way, you're absolutely right. I don't trust you. Not because you're bad and evil and immoral, but because I recognize all of us and the way we are. Lots. Matter of fact, I don't trust me in certain situations." There. Now, I trust that you will call me here. 877-573-7825. I trust that you'll have a question. I trust that you will listen patiently while I harangue you and go on relentlessly. And I trust that you will decide to get some benefit of it. Now, if you don't, then I just recognize that's your fallen human nature. Dr. Ray, I'll be right back.
Ask a happily married Catholic man or woman, and they'll likely tell you how vital it is to have a strong mutual faith life. It's the single largest component of a happy marriage. CatholicMatch.com is a tool to help you find who and what God wants for you. CatholicMatch.com is not simply a website, it's a real online community of Catholics who offer support and friendships. From that community, relationships and ultimately marriages are formed. Think about it this way. CatholicMatch.com brings God's people together by using technology for His ultimate purposes. Have faith in your search for a spouse. CatholicMatch.com, promo code AMR. CatholicMatch.com, the place where people grow in faith and fall in love. More information at CatholicMatch.com. Promo code AMR. CatholicMatch.com. Grow in faith. Fall in love.
And now a word of encouragement from Mark Shea at CatholicExchange.com.
Stalin once presided over a system that held a third of the world's population in its thrall. He is now dust, and the empire he dominated fell down in a heap less than 40 years after he went off to face his maker with the blood of tens of millions on his hands. "One death is a tragedy," he had once said. "A million deaths is a statistic." As he breathed his last, a certain Polish priest was taking up the long, slow, and stubborn struggle against regarding any human person as a statistic. He refused to adopt the Western faith that the cure for communist materialism was hedonistic materialism, that the atheistic vacuum of the East could be filled by the spiritual emptiness of the West, or that the Soviet worship of centralized power could be healed by the American worship of individualistic selfishness. That priest, who became Pope John Paul II, held fast to the truth that we do not fight hellfire with hellfire, but that we quench it with the waters of baptism. I'm Mark Shea for CatholicExchange.com.
Providing a little psychological vaccine for that which vexes you. Chronic condition, parentis maximus wimpus. Some of you have parentis minimus wimpus, but there's research out now that says approximately 74% of all minimus cases, sadly, proceed on to maximus. And those of you without children, you may have parentis latentius wimpus. The child will bring it out in you. This is Dr. Ray here on The Doctor Is In, 877-573-7825 is the number to get onto the program. Just a quick local announcement. I want to do it. This is kind of important. Teresa Bach, lovely young lady, coming from Washington, D.C., National Committee for a Human Life Amendment. Going to give some information on current legislation, possible resources on the whole pro-life movement today, October 14th, two sessions here at St. Raphael Bookstore. Those of you in the northeastern Ohio listening area, 1:33, 7 and 8:30. The two sessions at 1:30 and 3, and then there's a session at 7 and 8:30. The National Committee for Human Life Amendment is the U.S. Catholic Bishop's Public Policy Liaison. Just a little French lingo there, for pro-life issues. And this is wonderful. I used to be amateur life, and I've progressed, and they pay me, and now I'm pro-life. They want to educate citizens, develop pro-life networks, offer programs in support of pro-life, all kinds of neat things. The session is free here at St. Raphael Bookstore. Number 744-8451. That's area code 330. Well, actually, here, no, let me make it easier for you. Call St. Raphael's, those of you in this area. 330-492-7018. 330-492-7018. Yeah. There you go. Greg from Naples, Florida. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good.
Great. Well, I have a question. I actually met you about a year or so ago here at the Legatus Function in Naples. Enjoyed talking to you.
You dozed off twice. I remember that.
You have a good memory.
Yeah. You kept hitting the table, and the lady next to you was really upset because you had a little bit of spittle coming out of the side of your mouth. I felt bad for you.
Well, you even remember those details.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, it was kind of ugly. You spilled the water on her and then the wine, and it was just... when security removed you, you put up a heck of a fight. You really did.
Yeah, my wife was helping usher me out. That was... Anyways, question I have is, my wife and I have 7 children, and we have a little bit of been at odds as far as how discipline or lack of in certain areas I've kind of initiated with the children. We have, two older boys, and my oldest is 18, the one behind him is 17. And we put the 17-year-old in military academy last year in Valley Forge, PA, and they were in Catholic schools, and they were just sort of, some disciplinary situations, and she kind of felt that was a better environment for him. And actually, I like where he's at. I see good things there. Well, my 18-year-old, who I probably, didn't, maybe wasn't as strict with certain things or back him of the school and disciplinary action came about, and he sort of got, you know, just got booted. So kind of leaning towards, you know, I'm trying to step up to the plate here, and I'm thinking that maybe I need to have a conversation with him and, you know, maybe need to consider sending him to the military academy. I'm anticipating some resistance, and I'm trying to set the stage right because, you know, this has been, you know, a situation between my wife and I, and I'm trying to really rectify things here. And I've, you know, this is, I've come to this conclusion on my own, you know, I've been listening to your CDs and reflection with, you know, with the Lord in prayer that, you know, this is, she has been right, and I need to, you know, kind of come this.
Wait a minute. Okay. Your wife says that you've been a wimp.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good to hear. That's a much easier thing to deal with than you, your wife thinks you're too strict. So up to this point, you've been kind of a little laissez-faire dad here. Sort
yeah.
of, things will turn out okay, honey, no problem.
Yeah, because my family was laissez-faire with me growing up. And, you know, so, you know, my family thinks I'm strict, actually. For their perspective, I'm too strict, you know. But, and I have been in certain areas, but just not enough, I guess. And I see areas now where I haven't, the fruits of, I don't like some of the fruits.
Well, you're starting to see how it all pans out, aren't you?
Right.
I know.
Exactly.
All right, sit down with your wife. Say, honey, I owe you. I owe you big time. You were right. I was wrong. I'm ready to make some changes here. Give me your thoughts. Tell me what you think we should do regarding this. And you're going to recognize implicitly that she has better instincts than you do.
Right.
She has a better sense. Now, her style, you may not like her style. You know, maybe she gets too wordy, or she gets too emotional, or she negotiates too much, or she scolds him, or she nags him, or she gets on him, or she yaps at him. I understand that. And a lot of guys compensate for what they see as their wife's bad style by being wimpy.
Yeah.
That's the worst of both worlds. On one hand, you got a wordy, ineffective, nagging parent, and on the other hand, you got a lax, permissive, overlooking parent. Neither one of those styles is any good. So sit down with her and say, honey, I'm ready. I'm ready to do what I got to do here. Let's put our heads together. You tell me your thoughts, and we'll see if we can come up with something. But I can commit to you that I've seen the results, and I don't like them.
Yeah.
I think she'll breathe a huge sigh of relief because you have other children coming up, and she's thinking, right. I don't want to go through this with the other five.
Well, exactly, and this has resulted in actually we're currently separated over this.
Oh!
Yeah.
Well, you go back to her with your hat in your hand.
Right.
All right, well, I'm glad you got that insight, my friend.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I appreciate
okay,
it.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
Okay, take care. Bye now.
You know, one of the humblest guys that I ever had in counseling, he had two boys. He had a 25-year-old who was heavy into, no, three boys, 25-year-old who was heavy into drugs, and I think a 17 and a 12. He came in, and he said, I didn't agree with my wife's standards. I thought she was too strict. I thought her standards were too high. I thought she was too controlling. And so I undercut her, subtly sometimes, overtly sometimes. And my 25-year-old is a mess, just a stinking mess. I don't want the same thing to happen with the other two boys. But I realize that however I thought I was right. And I didn't even see how I was wrong. And even now, I'm not quite sure how I was wrong, but all I know, I was wrong. So I'm here to ask you, Ray Grindy, along with my wife's help, to teach me and show me how to do it differently. Because I already know I didn't know what I was doing. And I was so sure I did. What a humble dude. At least in that aspect. And he was good to his word. When we talked about the younger boys, he in fact acknowledged that, yeah, we got to do what we got to do. Even though, he said, it feels so unnatural to me. Even though my instincts and my inner parent wants to be, as Greg was saying, a little more hands-off-ish kind of thing. And interestingly enough, his wife was the one who termed something I talk about a lot here, blackout. She's the one. Because she said it. I talked about what it was. At that point, I didn't have a name for it. She said, you mean like a blackout? And I said, what a great name. All right. Michelle from South Carolina. Hi, Michelle. Michelle?
Hello?
How are you?
Are you there?
I'm here. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
We're connecting. I feel so close. I feel so affirmed.
Oh, yes. You're so great. I just love you. I think you're hilarious.
Is that it? Just three compliments? That's it?
Well, that's all I can come up right a second, because, you know, I know, you know, you're short on time. But I was
No, I'm not short on time for compliments. If you want to, like, you know, if you want to suck up 8 or 10 broadcast minutes just being superlative in your compliments, that's okay.
Well, no, because I want you to answer my question.
See, I knew it. All this is your neediness.
No, plus I'm at a restaurant, you know, and I'm in the deep south, and I'm nursing my baby. So before I get, you know, kicked out of here.
You are multitasking, woman.
At least I'm not on the toilet doing it.
But yeah, don't spill it on your kid's face, you know?
This is my question. I was at my girlfriend's house this morning, and we were talking about the election. And I said, you don't have your sign out. And she was like, well, you know, I'm not going to vote. I was like, well, what do you mean you're not going to vote? I was like, you have to vote. She was like, I don't like either of these guys. I'm not going to vote. I said, well, you have to vote for somebody. And I said, you know, whatever is the lesser of two evils. And we know what that is, so that's what you got to do. And she said, no, my mom told me that the Pope just put something out and said that you don't have to vote. And I said, I don't think so. Are you familiar with that?
Well, let me address this at several levels, okay, dear? First of all, I'm not aware specifically what the Pope wrote about social responsibility. I wouldn't doubt that he didn't write something, that he did write something on it. Okay, that's certainly, he's our shepherd and he's guiding us and he offers many, many good thoughts. However, she misunderstands at a number of levels. First of all, the Pope can't just come out and call something a sin because he thinks it's so. The Pope is there to defend and to elaborate on the Catholic faith as it has been understood and taught for centuries. Only in very specific circumstances can the Pope say, all right, by the official authority of my position.
Just like with the whole vaccine issue.
Right. He's not going to just come out and pronounce on all kinds of stuff. Even on, for example, capital punishment. When John Paul II came out and was very, very clear as a shepherd and as a private theologian, he's saying, look, Catholics, we really can't be in favor of capital punishment. He still didn't go so far as to say, and I obligate you under penalty of sin to think this way. He still didn't quite go that far. Okay, so the voting issue would best be viewed as part of a general teaching of the Church. The Church would say, yes, please, Catholics, be responsible. It is a privilege. It is something we need to do as Catholics to exercise the whole responsible citizenship that we possess. However, if you don't vote, it's not a sin. There is much that we should do that is good. But if we don't do it, it isn't necessarily a sin. If, for example, somebody comes to me and says, can you donate $100 for a seat at the pro-life banquet? And I say, no. Now, the Church would say, Ray, if you had the ability and the finances, that would be a good thing. We would encourage you to do that. But they're not going to say, because you didn't do it, you committed a sin. Same thing with voting. Yes, the Church, as our shepherd, basically as our guide in moral matters, says, yes, we have a responsibility as faithful Catholics to try to understand the issues to the best of our ability and vote with an informed conscience shaped by the way the Church teaches. However, if your friend wants to sit home on her pencil and not vote, she's not committing a sin. She's just not being a very responsible citizen or Catholic.
Hmm.
And I, you know,
so how would you approach that then?
I would just say to her, I'd say, by not voting, you are essentially permitting the candidate that is most against the church teaching, most against the morality taught by our church, to have, by elimination, an extra vote. Yeah. And there's a lot of that.
I wish I could find some sort of document.
Well, there isn't. I mean, there's documents out there that say, of course, you have to be responsible citizens. They're out there, and I wish I knew them by hand. If this was Colin Donovan or Jimmy Akin, they could probably cite them.
Well, I have that one by Chaput. That he wrote about, what's her name?
Nancy Pelosi?
Yeah.
Yeah, when she totally twisted and warped and didn't have a kindergartner's understanding of the church's view on this? Yeah, I know.
Right, right. Yeah. So, you know, but that's all I really have.
Well, there's a Catholic voter's guide out there
I've got two answers. Of those, so maybe I'll just give her one of those.
Yeah, give her one of those.
Well, just more food for thought,
Sure.
And there
you go.
It's really weighing heavy on my heart, so I feel like you shouldn't.
There you go. But we, you're absolutely right. We as Catholics, really, if we voted according to the way our church taught, we would be such a large voting block that pro-life candidates would be elected everywhere. Everywhere. Including the presidency, because we are such a large voting bloc. Sadly, however, among those who call themselves Catholics, there's not much of a difference between their voting patterns and the general population. Only when you get into people who call themselves faithful Catholics, who are weekly churchgoers at least, who on a number of variables seem to indicate they take their faith more seriously, then that is when it starts to separate out and we tend to vote much more pro-life. Thanks, honey. Great call. Dr. A, got to go break here. When we come back, more good calls. I'll be with you.
Call now for great advice from Dr. A. Now, don't you feel better?
This is Life News Radio. I'm Jim Anderson. The Family Research Council has launched a new television ad that focuses voters' attention on a bill that Barack Obama says would be his first to sign as president. The measure would make unlimited abortions a national law and overturn every abortion limit approved in any of the 50 states. Estimates indicate that could increase abortions by as much as 125,000 a year. A recent study showed the mainstream media were taking a pass on any discussion of Barack Obama's pro-abortion views. The Associated Press was part of the problem with a brief description of where Obama stands, and now the news service has omitted his position entirely. This is Life News Radio. 40 Days for Life is picking up steam, and you should be involved. It's simple, really. Whatever you think about doing in this election season, you can start with prayer. 40 days of prayer, fasting, and vigil. You might even find that prayer makes a huge difference in your life, in the life of the unborn, and in the life of our country. 40daysforlife.com offers a daily devotion and heartwarming stories of success. The website is 40 Days for Life. That's 40daysforlife.com. At lifenews.com, you'll find stories like the researcher who has spent over a decade examining the economic impact of abortion and finds that the approximately 50 million abortions in the U.S. since 1970 have cost the American economy $35 trillion. And a cancer survivor is trying to remind Americans that the Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure Breast Cancer Organization has ties to the nation's largest abortion business. For pro-life headlines you can read in less than a minute each day delivered to your email address, sign up at lifenews.com. This has been Life News Radio. I'm Jim Anderson.
All listeners of The Doctor Is In have the inborn potential to become callers, with a minuscule number able to rise to the level of on-air galactic Catholic media stars. All such persons will be judged using a rating system characterized by on-air persona, verbal fluency, intellectual alacrity, and a blatant willingness to compliment the host. All final judgments will be rendered null and void if any appeal is brought to the management of Ave Maria Radio.
Little music from the Darlings there. The Andy Griffith Show. Remember the Darlings? Those three guys that sat there expressionless. Kind of look like my sons. Did you guys clean up your rooms? And then they just do their Darling imitation. This is Mr. Darling, Sheriff Taylor. Dr. Ray Garendi here. 877-573-7825. 877-5-PEP-TALKS, the number. AveMariaRadio.net. Website of the producers of this program, Ave Maria Radio. EWTN.com. Big, big, big network that carries the program, as well as many, 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 many other Catholic networks who are gracious enough to carry the program. My website, drray.com, D-R-R-A-Y.com. We typically update it with monologues and kid tidbits and book excerpts and videos and what else? I've been trying to get some of my softball videos up there. My web person is very resistant. She said it's not having any relevance. And I said, hey, wait a minute. I said, last night I got three hits. That's right, I did. I got three hits. I got hit in the shin and two hits in the head. All righty, let's talk to Jennifer from Vancouver, Washington. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
I was out your way this weekend. I was in Great Falls, Montana, and it was 26 degrees and ugly.
Ooh, that's cold. Too cold for me.
It was. I couldn't believe it. I went out there in shorts. I should have known.
It's a little bit warmer here.
Now, who is buffaloing you here?
My daughter. I actually have four kids, 8, 7, 5, and 2. My daughter's the eldest. And she won't be motivated by anything.
Now, when you say motivated, are you talking about motivated to listen and cooperate or motivated to do what she's supposed to do, like schoolwork and chores and things?
Basically anything.
Anything. So you just, whatever it is that requires cooperation.
Nothing that requires cooperation. So getting up in the morning to go to school, I've soaked her bed with water to get her out. She won't brush her teeth. You have to stand there, but she stands there and just kind of watches you, watch her. And
where's your husband?
Standing there.
Does he do anything about it?
Oh, yeah. When she was younger and we spanked more, we've had times where she wouldn't move in the hall. And, you know, it would be, okay, you know, I'm going to spank you, and then you're going to go into your room and do what you're supposed to do. And she'd get her litany of spanks, and, no, I'm not going.
I have a question for you.
That went.
Jennifer, I have a question.
Yes.
Could be rather diagnostically significant.
Okay.
She's in what grade?
Third.
I assume that in kindergarten and first and second and third grade, when you went into the schools, you routinely heard her teacher say, oh, yes, she's a major discipline problem. She doesn't listen. She doesn't cooperate. I don't know how you deal with her. She's one of the most difficult children I've ever had. I assume you've heard that, right?
No, I know.
Oh,
I
know. No!
She's a great student.
Get out! Oh, that's a shocker.
I know.
I know. So you know what that says.
Actually, I tried to homeschool her, and that's why I sent her to school, because she said, when can I go to school? When can I go to school?
Do you know what that says?
She's cooperative for other people, but not for her parents.
And why is that?
I don't know.
It's you. It's you. It is.
But we're trying to figure out what is it about us that she doesn't.
I know. And I'm certainly not meaning to say you're a bad parent. I'm simply saying,
you're probably dramatically underestimating what you need to do. You're overestimating your consistency. You're overestimating your follow-through. You're talking way, way, way too much. You're negotiating way, way, way too much. It makes absolutely no sense for this little 8-year-old girl for the last 3.5 years at school to be a wonderful, model, beautiful student for 6.5 hours a day to a teacher who doesn't have a fraction of your level of discipline leverage, and then for her at home with you to be virtually uncooperative in every single thing you ask her to do. That essentially, 99% of the time, in my experience, that says that if we were to look with scrutiny at what the parent is doing, we would find all kinds of ways that we could make it better. Let me ask a base question.
Okay.
What's your daughter's name, dear?
Maggie.
Maggie. Oh, that that comes from the Greek magoi, which means she who lives independently. Yeah, did you know that? Yeah.
No, so. But I believe it.
Okay, yeah, I know. Anyway, she who is strong-willed only with parents. if you were to say to Maggie, Maggie, you didn't listen, honey. Go to the corner, please, and I'll tell you when you can come out. Would she go to the corner?
No.
Then you have no authority.
None.
You don't have any authority.
No.
Somehow, some way, in the last several years, you have taught your daughter to not listen to you, to not give you credibility. Probably what has happened is, over the years, she has won the discipline battles, if you will. I'm going to give you just the briefest of techniques that if you do it, it should work dramatically. You ready?
Okay.
When she's uncooperative, put her straight in the corner. Don't fight with her. Don't argue with her. Don't say, did you brush your teeth? Yeah, I did. No, you didn't. There's no water on that toothbrush. You did not brush your teeth. Why are you lying? Get up there and brush your teeth. I don't need to brush my teeth. Get up there and brush your teeth. Now, you don't brush your teeth, you're going straight to bed. Did you hear what I said, young lady? I don't want to brush my teeth. I just did it yesterday. Now, does that sound like you're home?
No.
Oh. Okay. Good. Sounds like the teacher's classroom, doesn't it? Okay. So, given that, first time she refuses, you say, Maggie, go to the corner, please. Now,
okay. You
have already said, I know you're thinking, Dr. Ray, you're stupid. Oops, I shouldn't use that word. Sorry. Dr. Ray, you're dumb. Because I just told you she wouldn't go to the corner, Dr. Ray. So why are you telling me to tell her to do something we both know she's not going to do? Don't you listen, Dr. Ray? Okay, I do listen, Jackie. Jennifer. Okay. No.
That's okay.
Teasing. I'm teasing. That was my attempted humor. I knew it was Jennifer. Now, as soon as she doesn't, you look at her and you say, Maggie, you're done, honey. Everything's shut down. Till I get my corner time, quietly, peaceably, cooperatively, which is now longer because you didn't go when I asked you the first place, you're shut down. That's it. You can't go outside. You have no television. You have no computer. You don't have your favorite shirt. You don't have your favorite hat. You don't have any books. You don't have any coloring. You don't have any toys. You don't have any stuffed animals. If we go anywhere, you watch. If we go out to eat, you watch. We'll give you a banana and a sandwich before we go. If we go to grandma's, you cannot play with your cousins. You cannot have dessert. You cannot do anything. Any privilege whatsoever. You have no money supply. That means you're going to pack your own lunch for school because you don't have any money supply. Transportation, all of your activities are over. You can't go anywhere. You can't do anything. You can't visit anybody until you go to the corner quietly, put your hands behind your back, and stay in the corner for the time that I ask. Now, you can't do this once. You can't do it 10 times. You can't even do it 100 times. You have to do it until you change Maggie's perception of you, till Maggie sees Mom and Dad as quietly making a request, following through with leverage. What's happening right now, Jennifer, is you have no discipline. You think you do. You think, I'm on her constantly, Dr. Ray! No, you don't. You told me you can't even make her stand in a corner. That means you have no authority. Oh, you may be able to take some privileges here and there because she can't do anything about that.
Right.
But you can't make her write sentences. You can't make her go to bed early. You can't make her come over and hand you something. You can't make her stop nagging you. You can't make her stop arguing. You can't make her leave a sibling alone. You can't make her brush her teeth without a fight. everything is a fight. And with an 8-year-old, when everything is a fight, it's the parent. Much of the time.
Okay.
Because 8-year-olds don't have the leverage. They can be stronger willed than siblings, and you can say, but Dr. Ray, we don't have that problem with the other three, so we're good parents. No.
No, we were just lucky with the other three.
Well, okay, I wouldn't go so far to say that, honey. But what I would say is that the other three are easier.
Yeah.
So therefore, if you're parenting at a discipline level of 4 on a 1 to 10, that's enough for the other three. Maggie needs a 7.
Okay.
And you're not there.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
Call me back.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, honey. Bye. I know what you're thinking. Okay, Dr. Ray, wait a minute. You threw out a whole bunch of observations and conclusions that may or may not be the case. Well, I qualified it. Jennifer seems like a sweet, sweet mom. And the reason that I threw out those observations was because Jennifer is, if you count the people who come to me in therapy, if you count the people who call on a radio show, if you count the people who email, if you count friends and family and acquaintances who come to me with particular problems with their children, Jennifer, I don't know, maybe the 50,000th parent who has described this kind of situation to me, and virtually every time. There are different little issues poking around here and there, but in homes with stable parenting and good people and loving parents and nothing developmentally amiss with the child, 99% of the time, the parents are just not at all doing what they need to do, either because they don't know how, or they're confused, or the kid threw them for a loop back when she was 2.5 and they never recovered. I will tell you, the number one thing I hear from parents who come into the office in a situation like Jennifer's and describe generally what Jennifer's describing, if we sit down, we talk together for a couple of sessions, number one thing I will hear, not all the time because not all parents do it, but the ones who do it, they will say when they come back, I'm living with a different child. I don't even know who this child is. She is completely different. She's pleasant. She is affectionate. I think aliens have taken over her body. And often I will say, you're just seeing what the teacher sees. Okay, Dr. Ray, 877-573-7825. We'll come back. We got Ann, Jessica, JP, others, all women waiting to talk to me on the next segment of The Doctor Is In.
All the advice, none of the bills. Come in. The Doctor Is In.
Fully Alive. Reflections on the scripture readings of today's Mass with Father Pat Egan, Chaplain of Ave Maria Radio.
Charity covers a multitude of sins. That's St. Paul quoting Jesus, commenting on the long-standing Jewish tradition of almsgiving. Alms is a technical word for a gift made to the poor or unfortunate out of pity, compassion, and mercy. It's spelt ALMS, nothing to do with arms and legs. Because of the motives, it's a very godlike way of giving, because God himself is compassionate and merciful. You and I and all Christians should be known for our generosity. Do people think of you as a generous person? I hope so. Remember, charity covers a multitude of sins. One day, a Pharisee invited Jesus to dine at his home. Jesus entered and reclined at table to eat. They didn't use chairs then, but couches. And at dinner, the Pharisee was amazed to see that Jesus did not observe the prescribed ritual washings before the meal. The Pharisees were exact about all these rituals, so the Lord corrected him, saying, "You cleanse the outside of the cup and dish, but inside you are filled with plunder and evil, you fools. Did not the maker of the outside also make the inside? But as to what is within, give alms, and behold, everything will be clean for you." Now this isn't just old-fashioned stuff. I'm sure all you folk listening in take a shower every morning. You're careful to take the outside clean. But make sure you keep the inside clean as well. Remember, Charity covers a multitude of sins, so be generous, repent, and keep your heart clean, and give alms. I'm Father Pat Egan, chaplain to Ave Maria Radio, commenting on the readings read today at Mass. Remember, inspired by the Word of God, you can be more fully alive.
Canary, Rick Gandhi, Ron Ganuti, all variations of the theme. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Thanks for joining me here on The Doctor Is In 87. Well, never mind this. I don't need to give out that number. We got one segment left, and the lines are pretty loaded up here. by the way, I want to thank again the folks out in the Diocese of Pueblo, Colorado. I was out there Friday night with Bishop Tafoya. What a very gentle-spirited man. Seems like a very faithful shepherd. Thank you all. Thank you, Kathleen, and everybody who made this day so very, very nice. It was so nice of you to put those mountains up when I came in. That was really a nice backdrop. I appreciate that very much. I suppose you have, probably have them back where they belong, huh? Jessica from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hi, Jess. Jessica.
Dr. Ray?
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for the call. You got help for us?
I do.
Okay.
The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops has actually put out a pamphlet called Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship.
Mm-hmm. Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship.
Yes.
And you can get that for free by going to their website?
I'm not sure if there's a charge for it or not. I know that they're putting out a summary of it in bulletins in parishes recently.
Well, I think that's great. An awful lot of folks have wanted our shepherds to speak loudly and clearly on this. And I think that's wonderful. Run that title by me again.
Yes. Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship.
Forming?
They have a great website. They have lots of documents on their website and resources.
Do you know the website offhand?
USCCB.org.
That's easy enough. United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, USCCB.org. Jessica, I am glad you jumped in here. Okie doke. Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. Good enough. Let's see. JP from Missouri. Hi, JP. JP, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You had a comment about the monologue, which was, it isn't just a lack of trust for children, it's also a lack of trust for adults, because that's a reasonable way to be in certain situations, to not trust yourself, right?
Yes, right.
I think you're absolutely correct.
And another question I was going to ask you while I was listening to Jennifer, I believe you were talking to, or about the Maggie.
Yeah.
The young lady before.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering another question came up to mind. At what age does a child become the adult? In this case, the gentleman that I'm speaking of is 93 years old, and myself is 63 years old.
Yeah.
On Monday is my birthday. And I'll be 63 years old.
Happy birthday.
And thank you, honey. And I was questioned, my faith and my whole adulthood was questioned right there, because I broke my toe last night. I was taken to the hospital.
Well, let me help you out here, honey. I don't want to get too far afield. We got a lot of folks waiting.
Okay.
Not unusually, if you read anything about aging, one of the big issues is that the child, in this case you, mm-hmm. becomes the parent.
Mm-hmm.
That with the declining abilities in mm-hmm. age for a lot of folk, and especially if you have to deal with dementia, most commonly in the form of Alzheimer's, then you, as the child, have to take over not only a caretaking role in some respects, but you essentially feel like you're parenting someone who parented you for all those years. Very, very understandable. It is a jarring experience because that was my dad. And
you have it kind of mixed up, Dr. Ray.
What? You mean I made a mistake on air? Oh,
yes.
JP.
Because the gentleman intact here is the 93-year-old man, is my friend, and I am going to be 63. And then the daughter is the one that is like Maggie, so to speak, is his daughter, 70-somewhat years old, and she's the one that said that it wouldn't look right for me to stay overnight because the neighbors would talk.
No. I think you can help her out on that one. JP, thank you, honey. That's a good question. I think you can help her out. Bless you. Okay, where are we going here? Some folks have hung up. Marriage counseling question. And Ann from California, deal with a son with pawn and bullying. Pam from New Mexico has a question. This is a particularly... connecting question for me, because she was reading something called The 12 Degrees on Humility and Pride, which, of course, I hope that my picture was in the very front part of the book. I think I'm like the 10th degree of humility right now. Hi, Pam.
Hello.
Am I there? Am I in the book? Am I cited often on humility there?
No, but, you know, if you're a doctor, I figure maybe, and you're a Catholic, I figure you might have an answer.
Well, I don't know if I want to comment on a book on humility that doesn't even acknowledge me as a model of humility.
No.
I mean, how up to date can it be? Maybe it was written before I was born, huh?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay, that's a relief.
I think a lot of saints give reference to these 12 degrees of humility and pride, and I know St. Jerome is one of them, a priest had told me. But as I've been reading them, a friend sent them to me recently, and it kind of got me thinking, and there's one of the degrees of humility that says that you always keep a calm voice, you know, and your whole disposition is always a calm one. Well,
what?
You know,
oh, wait a minute. Oh, sorry. Sorry.
But at the same time, you know, you can have this gentle nature about you, but manipulating people are really going to look at that as passivity, and that gives them a license to manipulate. And then, you know, of course, it's...
Well, you can't be manipulated. You can't
anger.
Be manipulated.
And it's like, well, how does humility work if you're supposed to keep that gentle nature about you and people aren't going to listen to it?
Well, first of all, you can't be manipulated if you don't want to be manipulated and you recognize it. Second of all, if you're going to act rightly, in this case with some kind of gentle spirit, and those folks misinterpret it, or worse yet, use it to their advantage, you didn't do anything wrong. You can't say, therefore, I won't act rightly with humility and meekness of spirit because there are those out there who will take that as a sign of weakness, a weakness of spirit, and will then try to take advantage of me. No. I mean, look at Jesus. He was quite meek and humble of heart. And, yes, there certainly were those who tried to take advantage of him, but he didn't permit it. Whatever he allowed because he was fully aware of what he was allowing.
And so, how did he do that and still keep the humility aspect? Because at the same time, he knew everything.
Yeah.
And he knew the right thing to say all the time, and I don't always know the right thing to say all the time.
Yeah, but you know what you got, though? You got the desire to say the right thing all the time, and that's what God wants. He doesn't expect you to be infinitely smart. I mean... Okay, maybe I'm semi-infinitely smart, but, you know, he doesn't expect you to know exactly what to say all the time. However, he certainly, I have to believe, would approve of your desire to do the right thing. You want to obey. You want to say a good, holy thing. You want to not lose your cool. You want to be meek and not prideful in what you say. Okay, you know as well as I do, there's going to be all kinds of people who are going to jump all over that. They're going to misunderstand it. They're going to try to take advantage of you. They're going to look at you as, oh, boy, is this great? She's not even going to stand up for herself. Well, I'll run with that baby. Yeah, you know that. And our Lord even talked about it. He said in Matthew chapter 5, blessed are you when people revile you, utter all kinds of slander against you because of me. Rejoice, be glad. That's how they treated the prophets. Your reward will be great in heaven. He knew it. He knew it. Your concern, my dear, I know this is, and this is just an ideal. We can't all do it. You know, talk about not being meek of spirit. What about a guy like me? You know, kind of this intense dude. You know, if you say and do the right thing, it may blow up in your face. You know that. And maybe that's what makes it even holier that you try to do that. Because you know some people are going to use it against you. And you still do it anyway. Why? Because God said so. Great question.
So is humility then meant to cause us to be abused?
No, it's not. It is not. But some people will do it. Any virtue could cause you to be abused.
Well, how can you practice a virtue and try to prevent at the same time being abused? Then?
Well, you're underestimating the power you have. Nobody can. What is abuse, dear? If they call you a name, so what? Or if they think less of you, so what? That's not abuse. That's their misunderstanding. That's their sinfulness. That's their bad reaction. You didn't do any of that. You simply did what the Lord said to do. And there will be those who will take advantage of it. If you say, I don't want to be taken advantage of. Well, keep in mind that you have a lot of leverage to not let that happen, obviously. I mean, somebody's going to mistreat you, you can kind of get out of their life, you know? So, Dr. Ray, Pam, great stuff. Call back. Lop from Dallas, Texas, you call back. I want to know what that SSA is all about there. Opposed to SSI, SSD, okay. Dr. Ray, good Lord permit, and see you tomorrow here, okay? Thanks, Andrew Kruchek, for all you do in the call, screaming and everything. Walk with God. Hold your kids tight by the hand.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506. Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
Join me, Father Thomas J. Loya, in Light of the East on this station. On our next program, how do we fit an ocean into a thimble? The differences between the eastern and western lungs of the church on Light of the East.
Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday mornings at 7 on 990 WDEO.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting on the Mind of Christ. For our program this week, we have a very special talk we just recorded. Our speaker is Boston College Professor of Philosophy Peter Kraft. With a pro-euthanasia and pro-abortion presidential candidate and a pro-abortion governor who is backing a state proposal that allows for the virtual unrestricted killing of embryos for their stem cells, Christians have to be informed. We have to unmask the purposely clouded issues being put forth through a $20 million plus advertising campaign. We have to know the truth. And we have to vote according to our faith. Dr. Peter Kraft is a very informed and eloquent teacher who is also a convert to the faith. He'll be addressing the topic of voting as an informed Catholic. This is not a program to be missed. So you're back from Mass. It's not yet dinner time. Won't you join us for a talk by one of the foremost Christian teachers in the world today, Dr. Peter Kraft, teaching on voting as a Catholic? Dr. Kraft will be introduced by Father John Ricardo. Listen this and every Sunday afternoon at 3 for Putting on the Mind of Christ on Ave Maria Radio.
As a successful Christian musician, he had won three double.